What if you were able to sit down for lunch with some of the greatest leaders in the world? What would you ask? What would they say? Welcome to the Lynch with a Leader podcast, where you're invited to join us in learning the spiritual principles behind big success. Here's your host, Mike Lynch. I am beyond excited that you've taken the time to tune in to this episode of Lynch with a Leader. It really is an honor to have you. If I've never met you before, my name is Mike, and I am pumped to be on this leadership journey with you. You know, we're all trying to be the very best we can be, but leadership's a journey. And what got us through 2021 may not get us through 2022. And so we better get good guides to help us on that journey. And we have come out strong in 2022 with Richard Blackaby, Mark Miller. And today, I don't know if there is a better synthesizer of leadership than the gentleman we're going to sit down with today. Dan Ryland has been in the leadership space for years. He is a go-to guy at every level for leaders who are wanting to be their best, wanting to learn, wanting to grow. And Dan is just that guy who comes alongside you, encourages you without telling you, strengthens you by just his presence and his words. And what I love about Dan is he blogs and he writes. And you don't have to just depend on, oh my gosh, I've got to meet him. No, he knows he can't meet everybody, so he writes it down. And boy, today we unpack his latest work, The Confident Leader. And Dan and I have a great deep dive into leadership, into that book, and into that space that we're all trying to learn and grow in. So this is a good one. So I want you to pull up a chair. I want you to take out a notebook, get ready to write, and I want you to listen into my conversation with Dan Ryland. Well, Dan, thank you so much for joining me again on this episode of Lynch with a Leader. It is an honor to have you again.
I'm thrilled to be back, Mike. And, you know, I appreciate you, love your ministry, our friendship. And so to get to do this together and hopefully be helpful to some leaders out there, it's absolutely a blast.
You know, you mailed me that copy of The Confident Leader, and the title captured me. Because I think every leader wants to be confident, and you would think it would come naturally to those leaders, but that's not always true, is it?
Not always true. Let me ask you a question. Do you like baseball?
Love baseball.
I do too. But let me tell you something. Even the best hitters, with incredible talent, they get in a slump. They can still hit. They can still do it. But if they don't have the right mindset, their confidence gets rattled. They start to get weird when they step up to the plate. They start saying, what am I doing wrong? And that happens to everybody, especially leaders. Mike, it's not that leaders have no confidence. It's more like the ups and downs of a roller coaster. They base their confidence on kind of what's going on around them rather than what's in them. And that's where it starts to go south.
You know, John Maxwell, who I know is a great mentor of yours and who you served with for many, many years, he had a great quote in the foreword to your book. He said, confidence is impacted by external circumstances, but it's improved by internal processes. Would you unpack that? What do you think John was getting after? Because you've worked up close to him. What do you think he was getting after with that statement?
Yeah, for 20 years we were together, and we still text and talk quite often, and he's the best. I love him, and we're so grateful for him. But, you know, Mike, this one's connected to the last question we just talked about a little bit. I think as leaders, we're just used to solving problems. I love to get up every day and solve problems. That's what we do. We make progress, solve problems, and help people. So I tell a lot of our young leaders, we make progress, we solve problems, we help people. And so much so that I think we're used to sometimes reacting, mostly responding to the stuff around us, you know, in our world, attendance, finances, a board member upset with you, staff getting COVID, you know, we just jump in and want to solve a problem. And that's good But here's what will happen. If you only solve a problem, if you only work on the outflow, only solving problems, you're gonna wear out. Mm. Here's why. Eventually, you're gonna hit a problem you don't know how to solve. And if you haven't developed a little bit more of who you are, your resolve, your resilience, your character, the right practices within you, in your leadership, your confidence is going to begin to tank. That's what happens with you, because we all hit a problem sometime we just don't know how to solve. So that it's really developed by going internal and with some practices, decisions, character-based kind of development.
Is that something, Dan, that you had to learn from a book, or did you as a leader have to learn that the hard way? What would you say?
More the hard way. Mm-hmm. I think, honestly, shameless plug here, I think I would have appreciated this book.
Yeah.
Because it would have helped me slow down to think about it.
That's good.
And it would have given me a framework of how to think about it. But then I go back to your question, a really good one. Did I have to read a book, or was it practice and learn the hard way? I think I could have jumped over a lot of the bumps and bruises if I had a framework of how to think about it. Yeah. Mm,
I love that. You know, you've been a leader over 30 years with some amazing organizations. Back to Skyline, the very first time I heard you back in the late 1980s when you and John came to New Hope in Atlanta, I got to hear you teach.
Remember.
And then just getting to follow your ministry all these years with Enjoy and now at 12 Stone. Have you struggled with confidence at times as a leader in these organizations? And if you have, does that get easier as you've gotten older, or is it still something you have to stay on top of?
Oh, well, that's two great questions. Let me see if I can knock them out one at a time here. I hate to say it, but I have to say it. Of course I did, particularly that I struggled as a younger leader. Mm. Mike, I struggled with insecurity for sure as a younger leader. I'm sure I do still some now, but that when I was younger, that really ate my lunch for a long time. And it caused me to turn more to performance orientation. I started working too much for too many years. And I had to really grow and mature through those insecurities. And I'll tell you a breakthrough thing for me that helped me kind of move through was that there's a huge difference between a leader experiencing an insecure moment and actually being an insecure person. Really big difference. Everybody has an insecure moment. I still have them. If you're actually leading, that means you're conquering new territory, right?
If you're
leading, you're going forward. You're doing stuff you've never done before. And you're going to have moments where you're just not sure what to do. But the key here, a key learning to help climb through insecurities is just because you don't know what to do, that it's not the same thing as not knowing what you're doing. And so when you can kind of get that thought in your head, not knowing what to do in the moment, it's not the same thing as you don't know what you're doing. Growing through that, maturing through those things, that helps a ton. I like your next question. Does it get easier? You ask great questions. Does it get easier? On days it does. On days it does. No, it's the serious answer is if you keep growing and maturing, it does. For the leaders who keep growing and keep maturing, it does. Because you gain a greater sense of what really matters. And so you don't get hung up in all the little insecurities or fears or whatever of what doesn't matter. You mentioned John Maxwell. He said to me one time that when he was young, he had this gigantic list of values. I mean, there's this huge list of values, and he cared so much about all of them. He said, but now, these days, my list of values, life values, you know, deep heart level conviction values is really short. Hmm. But man, they're deep and they're weighty, and I'll give my life for them. And, you know, going back to my younger sort of type A intense personality, my wife once said to me, she said, you know, in one of those intense fellowship moments that you can have in marriage, she says, Dan, you care more about everything than I care about anything. And I said, okay, I need to back off here a little bit, you know. But when you kind of grow through and realize, you know, not everything matters that much, let it go. Lean into what really matters. That helps a ton.
You know, you talk about being overconfident. And I think there's times in all of our lives, especially probably early in all of our works, that we were overconfident. We thought we had way more in the tank than we did. What are some signs for leaders that are listening now? Maybe it's for them personally, maybe it's as they lead teams, of overconfidence.
Yeah, you know, that one, it's good to kind of maybe, I could even maybe talk a little bit about overconfident, underconfident,
yes.
You know, put them together. I might put them together for a second so you get a picture, but I'll go where you kind of started us. And overconfident, let's go practical, because we can go theological and deep and all, but let's just go practical, because that's where we live, right?
Yep.
So it's like the signs, I think, one of the first signs is they don't listen well. The overconfident leader, they just don't listen well. They're convinced they're right all the time. Now, that's a good thing. I mean, who wants to follow a leader that always thinks they're wrong, right? So they think they're right, but they're not open to anybody else's opinion. And then their ego gets the best of them. It gets the best of them. And that's an issue. Mm. Now, let's contrast that for just a second to underconfident. Because in my 30 years of coaching, a whole lot more leaders are underconfident, at least in the moments, not all the time, but in the moments, than they are overconfident. And I'll give you a couple of quick signs to spot that if you're coaching for yourself, anybody, is they tend to second guess themselves a lot. They're smart, they're good, they know what they're doing, but they second guess themselves. Another one is that they're overly concerned about other people's opinions. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And here's the third one, and this one will get you lunch. They have difficulty making decisions. It's just they struggle making a decision. And many times they know what to do. Like I said, they're smart, they're gifted, they're talented, but they just, they can't push it across the line. And then that's where, Mike, that's where authentic confidence comes in.
That's good.
It's really not a blend of the two at all. It's really more about being comfortable being yourself. It's that phrase we've all heard, possessing a non-anxious presence. They're self-aware. They know who they are. They know their gifts. They know their strengths. They know God's with them. They have that sense about them. And that helps when you have an insecure moment or a fearful moment, you can press right through it.
I'd love to ask you a coaching question off that. You manage teams. You've led so many teams and high performing teams through the years. Who is easier to coach, an overconfident person or an underconfident person? Which one's the hardest to coach?
Oh, that's so good. I'm going to say, I don't want to say, can I change the word from hardest to most complex?
There you go.
Yeah, the most complex to coach. Okay, the first thing that comes to my mind is sometimes I'd rather coach an overconfident leader because it's easier to guide someone with some engines and going forward unless they're unteachable.
That's good.
If they just won't listen, then that becomes just exhausting. So, but my compassion and most of my life has gone to the underconfident because that's the vast majority. And they're so teachable. They're so hungry. They so want to do it. And they simply need, not simply, but when we can help them step over that, they don't believe in themselves. They got to get confidence in themselves, help them walk through that. They can often just soar right past the overconfident leader who might even be more gifted. But they'll just soar right past because they put their head down and they keep doing the next right thing.
You think that's the lack of humility sometimes in the overconfident leader, that they think too much of themselves? You think
yes,
that's part of that?
Yeah, I do.
You know, you start the book by talking about the power of foundational decisions, and you share the story of Chick-fil-A. Of course, we're both Atlanta boys now. You live on one side of Atlanta, I live on the other side. And your first visit there. Do you mind sharing a little bit about the story? Because it was a really, really good one.
Yeah, I loved it. It was great. I mean, it actually connects a little bit to a personal story, too. When we moved here in 97, can you believe that? We moved here in 97. And I had to confess, well, I actually kind of got caught. I didn't know. I'd never heard of Chick-fil-A. And so every meeting, every day, Chick-fil-A would come in. I said, what is this Chick-fil-A? You would have thought I blasphemed the Holy Spirit. I tell you, people love their Chick. Not from the West. We don't have, you know. So anyway, I had to kind of learn that this is like, you know, don't mess with Chick-fil-A. And then I became fascinated with the company and their core values and their employees, and they're just so good at what they do. And so I got to go on a tour, behind the scenes tour, and talk to the leaders and the executives, and it was phenomenal. And I think the principle I walked away with is that the earlier in life you settle your foundational decisions about who you are and what you believe, the better. And the story, of course, is this super short version, is that Truett Cathy, of course, the founder of Chick-fil-A, he made a foundational decision to close on Sundays. He closed business on Sundays. But it wasn't, the thing that's fascinating to me, it wasn't a business strategy kind of thing like you might think about. It was a foundational decision based on conviction.
That's right.
It was based on his belief in God and his desire for employees to set aside a day a week to rest, to spend time with their families. And this came from inside of who he is. And when I was there and met the team, this is the part that actually moved me. When I met the team there, you could feel the reality of their conviction. It wasn't just a slogan on the wall. It wasn't just what the founder said one time and they're supposed to repeat it. It's really part of who they are. And a lot of power comes from that.
Yeah. And I love, you know, in the Chick-fil-A model, how downstream that conviction goes.
Yes.
It really doesn't matter what part now in the U.S. or across the world you visit a Chick-fil-A, it's like visiting the one right beside the home office. Yeah. Because that foundational piece Truett had years ago has just bled all through the organization. And as you said, it's not just a slogan on a wall. It's truly a model that they've set up. It's a powerful tool.
Yeah.
It really is.
Very powerful tool. So.
You made a great statement in the book. You said the moment you step up to lead, you immediately become aware of your level of confidence. And I love that picture. You've got my daughter there in your organization at 12 Stone. And I think about Mary Michael. I think about her with this. You know, when you finally come out of the shadows and you step up to lead, all of a sudden, when you're out in front, you get extremely aware of your level of confidence. Why is it so true that you see your confidence when the spotlight's finally on you?
Yeah, I love your question here. I think most leaders have big dreams, visions, and goals. That's part of what's inside of a leader. Even if they're struggling with confidence, that's in their heart, that's in their head. They got it in them. And here's the thing, Mike. It's always, always, always better in your head and better on paper than in reality. It just is.
So true.
So when you walk into a boardroom with the most incredible idea, the most incredible plan, you're going to save the world. You walk in and you give your pitch, and then the board member says, what? What are you talking about? And in that moment, you immediately get in touch with your level of confidence. Because if you get rattled, you didn't walk in with the confidence you thought you had. It was just in your head. And it hits us so, here's why it hits us so fast. I love that part of your question. It hits us so fast because in our mind, there is no resistance. There is no objection. And so the moment you go live, the truth about leadership is there's resistance. And even if everybody's for you and everybody loves you and they all amen the plan or whatever, you're still going to hit obstacles. You're still going to find resistance somewhere. And that's the moment, whether it's the second you stand up or a week down the road, you discover your level of confidence in that moment. I tell you, I don't preach as much anymore. My time is given to leadership talks. And I've had times where I've spent hours and hours and hours on a leadership talk that I thought was killer. And then the second I stood up in front of a couple hundred pastors, and you have this moment, you know, where you've got these 200 sets of eyes looking at you like, bro, you better say something good, because I drove a long way and I got problems and you're supposed to solve them. And all of a sudden they go, oh no, John Maxwell, get John. He's really good. I'm here because he can't be here. You know, you have these feelings of, yeah. And so you just get really aware of your confidence when you step up, because it goes live.
Do you think that keeps a lot of guys in the shadows because they stepped out and then they, that fear got them, that questioning of their ability got them, and then they go back to the shadows? Do you think that happens a lot?
I do, but I have to say it in a different way.
Okay.
And then you can tell me more what means in the shadows. For me, it means they shrink back and they can actually begin to hide. They can stop being real.
Yeah.
And when you start to hide and you stop being real, your leadership crunches down small really fast.
That's really, you nailed it. You nailed
it. Is that what you meant?
That's exactly what I meant, because I think it ties into the two characters that you used in the book. You talked about two biblical characters that we look back on as phenomenal leaders, Moses and David. I mean, you had Moses, the great leader who helped the children of Israel get out. And then you had David, who became the great king of Israel. And both of them were overconfident at times, and both of them were underconfident at times and unconfident, and they struggled throughout their journeys. This is why I love the Bible, to find that authentic confidence. What was it about Moses and David that, because you had hundreds of characters you could have chosen, was it about those two? And there, you talk about Nehemiah as well, but what was it about Moses and David that really drew and knit your heart with them?
Yeah. Well, I think two reasons. I can even include Nehemiah in this picture here. Real fast, a couple of reasons that drew me to them. First of all, they're just such big characters. Mm. Pretty much everybody knows them. But two reasons: one is they were great leaders, and they're however very human.
Yep.
And their greatness jumped out. I mean, we all are drawn toward great leaders, and yet their humanity. I mean, Moses, arguably the greatest leader of all time, was obviously insecure and doubted me. And who am I, and God, who will go with me? And I don't want to go. I'm not even sure he wanted to do what God asked him to do. And then David, well, I mean, he really messed up. It's hard not to relate to that, you know, and maybe not what he did, but that he messed up. And then I'll tell you why I like Nehemiah, is because he just loved getting stuff done, man. Build that wall. And what leader? I've never met a leader who doesn't want to just get stuff done.
Yep.
And so they were great leaders, and they were all very human. And I think we're drawn to that.
Why do those guys give us all hope? So you've got these three phenomenal characters, but they had flaws. Why does that give us hope as leaders?
I think, Mike, especially in all those narratives in the book, we find ourselves in their story.
Mm, mm, mm.
And we get pictures and windows into our own heart because we find ourselves in their story. We find hope in their imperfection, yet inspiration from their accomplishments. And when we say, you know, like sometimes I'll say, man, if David did that, but God let him still do this, and Moses, he kept second guessing himself, but he did this. And look at Nehemiah, and he just, I'm not even coming down from the wall because I got something to do. And I just, man, I personally get fired up by that.
You know, we look at their lives because it's all postscript, and we see how God believed in them. We see that God believed in Moses and set it all up. And we see that God believed in David and caused the prophet to choose him out of all the brothers. And God touched Nehemiah's heart to have a passion to go build that wall. Why do you think we struggle to see what God sees in us and believe in ourselves like God believes in us?
Yeah. This is truly foundational. I think it all goes back to Genesis chapter 3 and where fears and insecurities enter in. And Mike, the shorter version here is I think God sees us through a lens of redemption. 2 Corinthians 5:17, we're a new creation, right? But we see ourselves through our daily imperfection. I know I trip myself up, and we struggle with the difference. So many leaders I coach struggle with the difference between knowing that God loves, they know God loves them, they know they're going to heaven, but knowing and believing he's actually with them in their leadership endeavor, there's a disconnect. And we talk, I know it's true because we talk about it with many, 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 many leaders where they, I know God loves me, I know I'm going to heaven, I know he's with me, I know he called me, I know I'm supposed to do this, but sometimes I don't know if he's actually with me, like as church planter or somebody that churches is not going well. Like, God, do you see what's happening here? And they can feel alone and that kind of thing. And so settling that God is actually with you in it is huge for somebody's confidence. And we have to do that by faith. We do that by the word, his promise. We do that by experience. We kind of know it, but we get tripped up when we start to doubt that he's actually with us.
That's really good. That is so good. And that's universal. It really is. Whether you're in Atlanta, Georgia, or you're in another part of the world, that is a universal thing. You talk about in the book, and I thought this was one of my favorite things you talked about, is the common fears that leaders face. Failure, rejection, embarrassment, the unknown. Which of these, as a leader, have you struggled with the most out of those common fears?
You just love to go personal, don't you? I love it. Well, if you go personal, I got to go honest. So, you know, I got a couple of thoughts here. Yeah. A quick one and then the more answer to your question. I think the unknown frustrates me the most. Mm. But in terms of actually fear, I think over the years, probably embarrassment. You know, I particularly in those insecure moments when insecurity will sneak in and I just don't want to look like an idiot.
Yeah,
I don't want to look foolish. And so here's how it unpacks for me sometimes. Fortunately, not as much these days, but it can still get me. I'll be in a meeting, right? And maybe at an executive board table or in a meeting with a bunch of exec pastors or something. And there's a question at the table and I've got this great thought. I've got this great idea, but it's a little out there. It's a little on the edge. And I go, I'm not going to say this. I'm going to look like an idiot, you know, and I won't say anything. And about a minute and a half later, somebody else will say the exact same thing. And then the whole room goes, whoa, yeah, dude, that's it. And I'm going, you are an idiot. You're an idiot either way, you know. But it's those kinds of things that God keeps helping me walk through. Mm. Say, what's your real fear here? Really? That was a fear? I go, you're right, God, you're right. And then next time I'll speak up and that kind of a thing.
You know, it's so true, Dan. And what's so interesting about it, you see that in boardrooms and you see it in houses. You see it in men who God's ordained you as a spiritual leader of the home, but there's this fear of I won't know what to do. So we don't do anything.
We don't say anything. I'm glad you said that because I gave a boardroom illustration, but it often happens one-to-one.
That's right.
You might be one-to-one in your office or one-to-one in your home, and you realize we call it the last 10% here at 12 Stone, where you've got something important that needs to be said, but you don't want to say it because it could put the relationship at risk. Mm. And so you hold back saying something that needs to be said. And out of fear, you don't know what's going to happen, or you could be embarrassed, or you could be rejected, or they won't like you anymore, or whatever it might be. And you'll hold back. And as leaders, we just can't hold back. We've got to say what needs to be said.
There's a word that pops up a lot in the book, and you spent some time talking about the word identity. Mm-hmm. Why is it so critical that leaders know who they are and who they were created to be? Why is that? And it really is good as that foundational Truett Cathy principle that drives who you are. Why is identity so critical for somebody to get?
I think it's important for us to see ourselves as God sees us. Mm. And that's difficult because that's core to self-awareness. And, you know, we talk a lot about self-awareness these days. It's almost buzz kind of in nature, but there's so much depth to it. And if you lack self-awareness, you might be able to do leadership, but not necessarily know how to be a leader. You know, we can do things like recruiting volunteers and developing strategy and preaching or whatever it might lead a meeting, but being a leader is different. That's having an intuitive sense of how to read a room or understanding if people like you. I don't mean a desire to be like, but are you connecting? Do you have good relationships? How do they perceive you? Being able to add value to the right person at the right time with the right word, just stuff that's more intuitive. When you're off in your identity, and then because of that, you're off in your self-awareness, you can have a lot of missteps simply because you really don't know who you are. Mm.
You know, we got a lot of folks that listen to this podcast that we have a group of pastors that listen. We have a lot of business leaders. We have lots in the athletic world. We have collegiate athletics, professional sports, lots of coaches and ADs that listen. And faith, of course, to a pastor is definitely a prerogative. But for many others that go, I have a faith, but it's what I do on Sunday. But Monday to Saturday, I operate separately. What would you say is, and I would qualify you in the leadership expert category, Dan, for all the years you've worked in this world, what role does faith play in the confidence of a leader?
I think faith makes the leader bigger than he or she is. And you shrink yourself down when you limit it to your own mind and your own capacity. I think, obviously, in my realm of faith as a person, of literal faith in God, it goes back to that notion that God is actually with you. And that's how, you know, you become a bigger leader, bigger person, when literally the power of God is with you. But I think, Mike, keep stretching me with these questions. I think it goes back to knowing by faith that you were created on purpose for a purpose. And when you know that, when you have faith that God created you on purpose, with, like, you weren't a mistake, with a purpose or for a purpose, and then we go back to what we've mentioned a couple of times, and he's with you, oh my gosh, that's core to confidence.
You know, you spend some time in there, and I think this plays right into that question, remaining attentive to God's voice. Yeah. And close to his heart, and that intentionality that goes into that. Why is it so critical for a leader, and why is it so critical for you as a leader?
Yeah. I think one of the most dangerous things possible as a Christian leader is to lead according to your own voice rather than God's voice. And it's, if you don't stay connected, it's honestly really easy to do. You and I know it's possible to build a church or a business on your own ability.
That's right.
You can do that without God. Now, I don't think it's going to last. I don't think it's going to have eternal impact, but it can be done, and it is done. And the most powerful factor in your leadership is prayer, that intimate connection with God. You know, for me personally, tell a quick story here, practical in nature. When I was at Skyline all those years, I had 30 prayer partners. I honestly, Mike, I would never, ever be in ministry for a second without prayer partners. Dedicated, named, I know them, they know me. I had 30 prayer partners back then for all those years, one for every day of the month. And they, you know, I had a prayer captain, and he would send out my prayer requests. And it was, I was very, very blessed by those dedicated prayer people. And they really prayed. They really prayed. They had their day a month. When I came to Atlanta, God said something that surprised me. Because he knew I was going to reestablish prayer partners. He said, I don't want you to have 30 prayer partners. I want you to have 7. And he said, I want you to have 7 because I want you to pray for them as much as they pray for you. And I know you can't do 30. And so I've had 7 prayer partners for 23 years. And each, they all sign up for a year at a time. Some of them have been praying for 10 years or more. One's been praying since San Diego for 25 years.
Wow.
Nonstop, daily. Actually, they're, Doug and Sherry are this book, Confident Leaders, dedicated to them. You see up in the dedication page. 25 years they've been praying for Patty and I. I can't imagine doing ministry without that. And of course, it's my joy to pray for my prayer partners. So, and it's easier these days. We just text back and forth all the time. But wow. To any leader out there, whether you have 1 prayer partner or 3 or 7 or whatever, I highly recommend that.
You talk in the book, Dan, about five core qualities of a leader, and we can't hit all of them. You talk about security, and I have never heard somebody else qualify this as inner peace. That is a powerful thought, that one of the core qualities of a confident leader is that security. Do you mind unpacking inner peace and what that means to you?
I can. And again, from coaching a lot of leaders, there's this phrase that just has come to my mind many years ago, and it seems to resonate in my coaching conversations, and that so many leaders operate with what I call a low-grade anxiety, a low-grade anxiousness. It's in their belly. It doesn't stop them from functioning. They're okay. They're not a basket case. And I don't mean that. I don't mean they're like, frantic, anxious. But it's just this low-grade all the time. And because of that, what they don't have is a sense of inner peace. It's just, if I can go over the top a little bit, that all is well with my soul kind of a thing. It's just not there. And they operate that way for years. And I think that when we have this sense of security within us, it begins to flood us with an inner peace that God is with us. We're not trying to perform. We're not trying to catch up. We're not trying to be who we aren't. It's, it took me again way back in my much, much younger years. It was great for me to discover I tried to be other people for a couple of years as a young kid. And when I figured out God made me this way, I like being me, and being me actually works. Being somebody else doesn't work. That sense of security, wow, it leads to peace inside.
What's it like when you walk into a room, and you're probably a master? We've never talked about this, but I have a feeling you can walk in a room. If I brought you over to our staff and we've got 38 people in a room, you could walk in and probably pick up on a lot of things. What's it like when you run into somebody as a leader that has that security and that inner peace? What's different about them than everybody else?
Oh, I can spot it in a second. Talk about reading a room. They have a sense of poise, a sense of calm, a sense of I'm here and I'm present. I'm confident, but not arrogant. And they have this overwhelming sense of I care about you right now in this moment. I care more about helping you know who you are and be better about being your best you than worried about making you feel better about me, kind of a thing. They exude that. I think everybody can have that tool in their tool belt, where I call that just relational charisma.
Yeah.
And very few people have, I certainly don't have what I call stadium filling charisma. I don't have any of that whatsoever. Maxwell does. The bigger personalities, they walk in and they just own everything.
Yep.
But every leader can have this. When you walk into a room, and you intentionally seek to cause others to feel better about who they are rather than to cause them to feel better about who you are, instantly you're moving in the right direction.
You even think about the life of Christ and what he was like as he went through those towns and villages, and you wonder, was that part of the draw to him? Is everybody saw this guy, he's different.
He's
different than all of us.
Yeah.
That's really good. Really, really good. You made another statement in the book. You said confident leaders are resilient. Everybody's going to fail. It doesn't matter how hard you've worked. It doesn't matter how much you've achieved. You're going to fail. Why is it so important for leaders to know that resiliency is just a piece of the puzzle?
Because we all face tough times, setbacks, and failures, where they're just going to come. And the leader who lacks confidence is going to get stuck in those setbacks and tough times. The confident leader gets back up again. There's a talk I've got to give a couple of times, and the essence of the talk is this: the environments you're in plus the people you're with determine the pressure you can sustain. And that's the formula for a resilient leader. the environment you're in, and there's just two for most of your life, your work and your home, plus the people you're with, the people who are closest to you, determine the amount of pressure you can sustain. And so obviously if the environments you're in are difficult or negative or unhealthy as opposed to positive and life-giving, that's an issue. And leaders will ask me, so well, what do I do if my environments aren't so healthy and positive and life-giving? That answer is determined by the people you're with. Mm-hmm. And the people you're with are typically in one or two groups, life givers or life takers. Mm. So regardless, obviously you want to be in the more healthy environments, but regardless of the environment you find yourself in, the people closest to you have to be life givers. They have to pour into you and give to you so that you have the energy and stamina and resilience to give to the many, 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 many that you need to pour into. That really is the essence of finding that resilience is the environment you're in plus the people you're with determine the pressure you can sustain.
You use a quote towards the back of the book from one of my favorite leaders on the planet, Rick Warren. And you talk about the heart that leaders genuinely care for those that they lead. And I think anybody who's ever been to Saddleback, anybody who's ever met Rick in person, his genuine care that exudes out of himself. The quote was, great leaders genuinely care for and love the people they lead more than they love leading itself. That's powerful. That is powerful. Do you mind explaining that a little bit more and why that resonates with you so much as a leader?
I can, and I'll connect it to a quick story about Rick. I remember a long, long time ago, back in the Jurassic era, probably the late 80s or something, I was there. Of course, you know, we grew up there, so that was just a stone's throw. And so it was a big conference, and of course, Rick was the speaker. And since I'd driven up in my own car, I think he had maybe met me for a second and a half, but that's only because I was with John, you know. But the conference was over. Everybody was gone. Everybody was gone. But it's a beautiful Southern California day, and he was walking across the courtyard. And I was walking the other way toward my car, and we just met for 2 seconds, right? And he goes, Dan. And I turned around and he goes, hey. I said, hey, you know, like I'm just a kid. Who am I? You know? And he said, come on over here. And he sat on a bench. He said, what's on your mind? And we just talked and talked and talked leadership. And I'll just never, you know, I've seen him several times over the years. And now a couple years ago, he was one of the mentors in an exec pastor roundtable back there. It was so good to see him again. And he did the same thing again. He's, hey, Dan, hadn't seen me in 10 years. And so the thing about it is, caring's not automatic.
That's good.
Caring's not automatic. It comes from the heart. It cares, comes from the soul. It's something that's intentional. You know, you've had a waiter or waitress and you're pretty sure, I don't think they cared, you know.
Yeah.
You've had a doctor or a boss or a mechanic, I don't think they care. And you know quick when someone cares. And it's not automatic. It's something that comes from inside. It's intentional. And something that I would pass on to our listeners here, Mike, is sometimes leaders will get honest and they'll say to themselves, you know, I'm not sure I care. I'm not sure I care like that.
Yeah.
I want to care. I know I'm supposed to care. I'm not sure I care like that. And the truth of the matter is you can't really learn to care. But if you'll ask God to help you care, if you ask God to put that in you, He can and will. He can.
I totally agree with you. And I've watched people change in that area. I think there are some people naturally bent that way.
They are. They're wiring. Yeah.
Boy, but I have watched, and if you've ever been around Rick, anybody who's been around him will go amen and yes. And it really, it comes out of who he is. And, you know, when we went to Saddleback 2-3 summers ago, during a really rough season I'd lost both my parents, and we went out there for a conference. And it, from the minute you get out of your car to you walk in the building, any volunteer you meet gives you what Rick gives them. It's one of the most amazing, that love and care. I love at the end of the book, you talked about David and Moses and Nehemiah in the book. You know, scripture says David served his purpose in his generation. We know Moses didn't want the pleasures of the world, but saw the treasures of Christ. What do you pray, Dan, as a leader, that's the final statement that the Lord would write about Dan Ryland's life?
Wow. You know, something sarcastic and silly comes to mind, and then I'll try to be serious. But that's a big question. I think I smile, and God, he might say to me, I'm glad you didn't decide to play guitar for a living. Because you know my passion, and I love it. And I, you know, one of my most favorite moments that, well, it really wasn't funny, but it was, it's a fun story to tell, was one of my guitar teachers stopped in the middle of a lesson. He just stopped dead in his tracks. His name is Joe. And he said, Dan, I sure hope you're a great preacher. And then went right on with, and I thought, I'm not paying you for this abuse. What are you doing?
That's right.
Because you're bad. You are not. Anyway, seriously, this is a big question. And it goes back to what I truly believe God spoke into me as a very, very, very young leader. And I hate to use what sounds trite, a purpose statement, but for me, it's actually very genuine. Simply three words, and was placed deep in me a long time ago, build the church. Mm. And for some 40 years, I've been trying to do that. When I say build the church, I don't mean buildings, you know, his people, his body, the leaders. I think it would be mind-blowing if he would say, I'm proud of you, son. You helped me build the church like I asked you to do.
You know what I love about Dan is Dan always brings it. He always brings his A game and his best. I know last year I had a good friend in town from Colorado, and he is moving into a role that Dan has occupied for years, and we were able to get on Dan's calendar. And I know the man's got a million things going, but for that hour, hour and a half, he was present. He was there. And that's one of my favorite things about Dan Ryland. I mean, he is a guy that's reached back to help me in my journey. And in turn, he's helping all of us in our journeys. And now we're all seeking to be confident leaders, right? I mean, we don't want to lead with question marks and lead with worry and doubt and fear. We want to lead confidently. And man, when you can unpack scripture like Dan can, it's so, so good. I hope and pray that your time with us each and every episode is a blessing to you and your leadership. If it is, and you don't subscribe, man, press pause, go to iTunes, go to Spotify, whatever account that you listen on, and subscribe so you never miss an episode, because we're coming right back next week with Ken Coleman from The Ramsey Show and Ramsey Solutions. Ken has his own show there, The Ken Coleman Show. And boy, he has written a brand new book that is so good, From Paycheck to Purpose. And it is gold. It is so good. And it helped me so much just prepping for the interview. So I hope you'll take time to go to subscribe, leave a rating and review, and man, share this, pop it out, share it with a friend. I love you guys. Thanks so much for being on this journey with me. And I can't wait to see you be the leader that God created you to be.
Thank you for listening to the Lynch with a Leader podcast with your host, Mike Lynch. If you enjoyed this episode, you can help more people hear it by subscribing and leaving a review wherever you may be listening. For full episode notes and more spiritual leadership resources, visit MikeLynch.com.